Welcome, everybody, to the PlayStation 5, our central podcast. We give you all the news, the reviews, and the
rumors
on the PlayStation 5 and its upcoming games. I'm joined by, in the blue corner, it's Vikarth.
Doing well.
And in the red corner, it's Jordan.
Well doing.
It's 2024. Guys, how are you feeling about the year that's just passed?
I'm so excited that we're here, the three of us together, for the first time in months.
Jordan and I have settled our beef. We've squashed our beef that we've had. We had this, apparently we...
Or tofu for you vegans out there.
we had some bit of hatred, bit of animosity towards each other. We refused to be on the same episode, which is why it was so long since all three of us have been together. But
what caused that beef? What was the riff?
Well, Jordan has since apologized for his mistakes. So yeah, I think
what were those mistakes? Can we air the dirty laundry? You don't know.
Really, what it came down to was, it came down to it. Vike had said to me, dude, I'm finally going to start Death Stranding. And I said, Vike, don't even hit me with that. I went out and played Metal Gear Rising Revengeance before you, man. The game came out 11 years ago and you still haven't played it. And you jump on the line to play this. And he said, yeah, man, I am. You're a dog. And I said, whoa, getting personal. And then we didn't speak for 3 months.
We didn't.
Went to his wedding, didn't even speak to him.
I was trying to strike him off the list, but it was too late. The invites got sent out. Couldn't do it. But
his wife was walking down the aisle and I was in her ear going, are you sure?
it's so funny. I actually went to my wife's Christmas party for her work and I met one of her like colleagues, husbands, and we were just chatting. Turns out he's a huge Metal Gear Solid fan. And we were just talking about MGS. And then I was like, yeah, I haven't played Revengeance. And he's like, dude, you got to play it. And that's coming from, he's like a bigger fan than me. So
let me guess.
I don't know.
You're going to listen to him.
This is where the real beef
starts. We've been mates for 14 years. You're listening to this bloke. You've met for 5 minutes. This is where it started. Mate.
This is where it starts.
Where came from.
Look, I might have to dabble. I did have the PS3 set up because I was playing, I've been playing Red Dead 1. Probably about 15 hours, 10 hours, 15 hours in. And then I stopped to play another game, which we'll talk about. And now I've got to go back. So now that while I have the PS3 finishing off Red Dead, I can check in Revengeance. It's like 6 hours, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something pretty short.
Yeah. So maybe I'll do that. Finish the story of Raiden, of
Finish
Jack.
The story.
I will.
Yeah. Me and Jordan have been playing a bit of Rocket League. And we get in a bit of trouble over there for our slandering of teams. Our clan name is 4 Foot Donkeys, 4 Foot.
And because as soon as we get one goal up, Dan will message the other team saying 4 Foot Donkeys.
Every time I play online and every time I see Dan online, Jordan will be online and they'll both be playing Rocket League.
We've been playing religiously. We worked it out, Dan. I don't know if you've got the thing up there now. We must have cracked 200 games now since like the 22nd or something, was it, of December. We've played a lot.
Yeah, the 20 so much. The 21st, where 101 wins to 100 losses.
Wow, that's pretty
so
good.
We cracked 500, which is pretty good. That's 201 games.
Either of you have the Lightning McQueen bundle?
No, it was so expensive.
We should have won about 50 of them, right, Jordan?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's good fun. Great game.
It is good, such good fun. But, yeah, we get into a bit of trouble. Dan's tried a new tactic where he just messages them at the start of the game and goes, hey, guys, I got to go. Can you please forfeit?
Hasn't worked yet. Trying out different strategies.
And then we get 3 goals up and he goes, told you should have forfeit, donkey.
And usually we get some very interesting replies.
Colourful responses.
Let's just say if we're 3 down and then we end up winning, Jordan may hit them up with a little message just once they rage quit.
It usually sounds a bit like this. Hee-haw, donkeys. Hee-haw.
It's all in good fun. If we ever...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes if they leave before we can, like, smack talk him in the lobby. I go to my recent plays, click view profile, and I'll send him a message through PSN. And be like, why'd you leave, man?
We've also been on the receiving end of that, which is not fun when you're 3-up and then you lose 4-3.
It's not bad because we don't take the smack talk too personal, whereas like everyone else seems to.
Oh, they get so they offended. Get
real angry.
We especially when I call them pipsqueaks.
Or weasels.
The last time I got hate message, or I got a audio message sent to me, and the guy was telling me I'm absolute trash.
Really?
I was playing Halo Wars on Xbox Live and I lost. And he's like, I forgot the message. Was like, dude, you suck, man. Like using warthogs, like what are you doing? And like I was just he just destroyed me. But you know what? I learned from those mistakes. And I got
better. Have you ever trash talked on a game, Vi, yourself?
Not really, nah.
Yeah, you're a good citizen.
It's not that. It's just once the game's over, it's sort of like, yeah, unless they message me, like, I don't know. Yeah, I just
spoken like a true casual.
Not even snarky. If they're going at you, you'll give them something back.
But I normally play in party chat. Like if I'm playing games that are like that, let's say where, you know, Call of Duty or Rocket League or things like that, where it's like a multiplayer type scenario, I'd be on party chat. So I can't hear any of the game chat. I don't know what they're saying. So I never really hear it sort of thing.
Man. Those Modern Warfare 2 lobbies back in the day. Oh,
mate, that I was there back then. That was man. Good. That was
a screaming match before every match. Especially if you got against, if it was us six in a clan versus another six.
Yeah.
That would just be who's the loudest.
It got messy.
Yeah. All right, guys. Top 5 games of 2023. We've all got our 5. Vikarth has a interesting stipulation on his. What's your stipulation? Because you had a wedding and other things on personal stuff. So you didn't get to play as much as me and Jordan. So yours is just 5 you've played this year.
Yeah, I didn't play many 2024 games.
But it's still a good list. It's still a good list what you put together.
It still is, yeah. Yeah.
There were 2 games there that were about 70 hours each. Yeah, that were
it's a good
just
list,
from
Mike. You've got Tetris,
years.
Pong, Pac-Man. A good looking list.
I occupied my time playing older games that I sort of never got around to, as opposed to trying to, you know, play games this year that, you know, were probably lesser quality than some of the greats that I played this year. So I'll be talking about those.
Well, why don't you kick us off, Mike, with number 5?
Well, my number 5 is actually a game that did come out this year, as most of my list are.
He's breaking his own rules already.
He's breaking his own rules up fast.
It is Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat 11, I guess it is. No, wait. Mortal Kombat 12.
One.
Mortal Kombat 1. Yes, Mortal Kombat 1.
We're off to a great start.
Yeah, it's
everyone's just purchased the wrong game off your recommendation.
Instantly purchased. So, look, MK1, anyone who's been listening knows how hyped I was for this and how excited I was, especially for the reboot of the story. But, yeah, look, really, you know, great characters, a lot of narrative changes about this game that people might not have been happy about. You know, the identity of Scorpion not being Hanzo Asashi, it's completely different. Some of the alliances and characters like Reiko and, you know, who's in the... There's no Black Dragon, no Special Forces, but we saw the Lin Kuei and how they formed. And it was just so much happening. So it was even just with, you know, Raiden not being an Elder God, it was Liu Kang and all that sort of stuff there. It reminds me of like The Boys, the show The Boys, where it deviates a lot from the source material, The Boys comics, but every decision they have made pretty much has been a really good one for the show. And look, Ed Boon and the people at Mortal Kombat are still the originators of the source material, so they can change it however they want. But what I'm saying is every different creative decision they made was, I actually thought, was really good. I really enjoyed it. Even the way they changed how Tarkatans are, and there's just so many changes to the story, and I thought they were really good. The fighting mechanics are really good. There was a good balance of the speed people wanted with MK9, you know, comeback mechanics of MK11, which no one was a really big fan of. But I just thought they, you know, like turned the dial back to Mortal Kombat 9, which is, I think, what more people wanted, back to the basics. And all the characters were incredibly varied. They had a lot of good moves and the meta was pretty open at the start. I'm not too sure now since it's been such a while, but there was a lot of good game modes. And yeah, I'm once again one of the rare MK people who really just play for the story. But even the online, I did play quite a bit. The net code was great. And they've got the Aftermath DLC with a lot of the new guest fighters and Omni-Man, and Homeland is going to be coming and that sort of thing. So look, I have to put this as number 5. It was one of the best games I played and played a lot online. I really loved the story and the way they tied in and called back to, yeah, Deadly Alliance and Armageddon and that sort of thing, especially the finale. Just, it's a, yeah.
Are you still playing or have you given up?
I haven't. The funny thing is, I remember I was getting to this point where, like, my win-loss online was actually decent. Like, I wasn't winning more than I was losing or losing. I think it was around the one or a bit. I was winning a bit more.
Mm.
And then as I just remember, I was about to take it to the next level. You know, I was going to start practicing more advanced stuff. And when I say advanced to other people, this is probably the most basic stuff. But to me, I've always played Mortal Kombat for the story. This is the first time I was actually trying to compete. So things like hit confirming and stuff was not something I'm really good at. I've never really done. So I was actually got into training mode. I was ready to start practicing and taking my game to the next level. And then I thought, you know what? There's Red Dead I've got to play and a few other things. And I'm like, all right, I'll park it now and shift over. But I do wonder what would have happened if I'd stayed and kept playing. What is the game of the name of the game mode where, you know, it's like the, do you remember, yeah, Dan? The that game mode? Yeah,
it's invasion. Called
Invasion. That's the one.
Yeah.
So I thought that it was good, but it was just so grindy. It was just so grindy and it became very repetitive. It's a good way to, you know, unlock stuff. It was a good way to circumvent the crypt, which a lot of people thought was very grindy. But this is more engaging, but still.
Was it better than the crypt, you reckon?
I thought it was. Yeah, I thought it was better than the crypt. It was more engaging. The crypt became this huge, like, its own thing, which is great. Yeah, no, it was, I mean, I could praise this game forever. I thought it was, yeah, one of the best of the year. And I think Mortal Kombat is just getting better and better. A lot of people were happy with the fan characters like Ashra and Havoc coming back and things like that and the stages. It's just a real, even Shujinko as a cameo, it's really good. It's really good, and I'm excited to see where NetherRealm take it because I believe that Mortal Kombat 11, they were plateauing a bit. They were running out of ideas a bit. Then they hit us with the Aftermath DLC and started everything again, and now they've got so much to do. They haven't even touched characters like Jax and Sonya and Kano, like, you know, Cabal, the Black Dragon, the Red Dragon, the Special Forces. They haven't touched any of it. So it's exciting to see how much more they can do and how they're sort of doing everything. So Mortal Kombat 1.
Jordan, number 5.
All right, my number 5. Now, actually, I don't remember if someone said that they had this on the list, but my number 5 is Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Nice.
So I actually forgot this game came out because just with the madness of the second half of this year, I actually did forget that this game came out this year. But
yeah,
I really did enjoy my time. Yeah, I really did enjoy my time with Star Wars Jedi Survivor. At the end of the day, I do think I prefer Fallen Order more.
Mm.
Having said that, Survivor is still great. It still has those, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening moments that you don't see coming at all, which have sort of become a bit of a trademark for those games where you're getting a bit of a stock standard sort of Star Wars adventure and then out of nowhere, a character you didn't think you were going to see ends up popping up.
Mm.
And yeah, I really enjoyed my time with it. The combat is still super smooth. It's still super fun and challenging. I found Survivor a lot more challenging than Fallen Order in a good way. It did have some performance issues. And if I'm being honest, I think the ambition of the game sort of got to them in the end, because I one of my criticisms of it is I don't think you need to have areas that are so big. I don't think bigger is always better. So was it Bergano? Was that that big planet where
the main base, the
biggest one that you could, the main base where you could do all the exploring, and the frame rate would just chug. It's just way too big. What I really preferred about Fallen Order was the environments were big, but they were deceptively big. Like they weren't deceptively small, I should say. I don't know the correct word I'm trying to use there, but they're actually not as big as it felt like you were, because you're doing a lot of winding around, and it felt a bit more curated and carefully designed, where sometimes where you get these big open worlds, they sort of just go plop, here's, and I'm sure there's more thought to it than that, but there's just like a lot of, here's this map, you can walk around it now, where I sort of prefer the more curated, designed sort of labyrinths and stuff you've got to go through and all the backtracking that can happen. But having said that, I still love Cal as a character. I think he's great. The moment he pops up in mainline Star Wars stuff, like the Disney Plus shows or anything, which I think is a chance that does happen, that'll be fantastic, because I think he has that sort of appeal now and that star power as a character for the things that he's doing, especially when inevitably a third game comes out. So yeah, I really, really did enjoy my time with Survivor. It was probably a little bit too long. I probably could have like shaved off like a few hours, which again, due to the size of some of those environments, but a really compelling bad guy, compelling story.
They've got a chance. Got a chance with that third game to make a real amazing series, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
If they can,
I think give it a little bit more time in the oven, maybe to sort out those frame rate issues, and then.
You know, the interesting thing about Jedi Survivor, it doesn't look like their stories really are interconnected, but it's the characters that hold the game.
Character, you know, driven.
Yeah, it's character driven. Like, you know, it's not like Jedi Survivor followed from Fallen Order in its story. It was more the characters kept going. And yeah, like you said, Cal, I think, was a lot stronger of a character this time around and just a lot more well-written. And, you know, it was really exciting to see him dabble in some dark side and... without spoiling much more and things like that. So I really hope that they go all in with Cal. You know, they've got a clean slate. You know, like you said, George, with Star Wars, like you said this ages ago, but like when have they ever had a clean slate? They're so, you know, with any Star Wars property, you're so bound by the restrictions of the law, surrounding law, you know, the Mandalorian, you know, you can't do much because of this, this, and this, you know. So... with a game like Jedi Survivor and Cal and the world, they just need to take advantage of the fact that they really don't have anything holding it back, any time period, any event, any characters, except maybe one or two. So they just need to take advantage of that.
Yep. Last thing before Dan gets to his number five, the other thing we need to comment on is it didn't suffer from game two of a trilogy syndrome, which we felt all collectively, I think, that Forbidden West did last year, where it felt like it was sort of just like a stopgap to get us to number three, whereas this felt like its own title, which now number three is coming and it's great, but it wasn't to the detriment of number two in its story.
And do you know why that is? It's probably because of
more contained.
More contained. You know, Horizon heavily follows off its previous story. And that's a strength. Don't get me wrong, that's a strength. It's not a bad thing. Yeah. But Jedi Survivor was able to avoid that whole problem because it's not building off its previous sort of story.
Yeah.
So you prefer, you guys prefer games that are contained than building off the previous, or you like a mixture?
I do prefer a mixture. When I look back, we could probably do another episode on this. One of my things I always look back on is the God of War original trilogy and the Uncharted trilogy on PS, like all the Uncharted games, and how the Uncharted games don't have a story going through them, which is fine.
It's like characters.
Because it's character driven. Whereas like the God of War original story was two picks up immediately as one ends. A little bit after one ends. And then three picks up immediately as two ends, which I think is to its strength because of the nature of the story. It sort of just depends on the story you're telling.
Mass Effect picks up. Does it not?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's bad. I just think Horizon just suffered a little bit too much because it felt like all it was doing was trying to set up number three.
Yeah, Jordan's right. Sequels, it had that sequel syndrome because What? Nothing worse in a. There's no worse story trope, Dan. And you know, as a movie buff, you know this. Where the villain, the ending of the movie or the game is the villain's coming. It's like, yeah, wait for the next one. It's like, what have we been doing this whole time? And it's frustrating.
Unless it's the Joker card at the end of Batman Begins.
I'll look into it. I never said. No,
you're right. It depends how good the main villain of that game is.
Yeah, it definitely does. I'm not saying it's not a blanket thing. It was just that in Horizon's case.
Those characters.
Yeah.
But the other thing I will say, Dan, to the Batman Begins analogy you brought, Batman Begins, the story was fully wrapped up and there was a full resolution.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
With Horizon, there wasn't a full resolution because I forgot what they called the far.
Well, I think everyone has an issue with Horizon's ending. I mean, I think that's safe to say. It's safe to say that ending fell flat for most people.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it did too.
That doesn't mean it's a bad game. It's a great game.
No. Definitely still not. A great game.
Many respects. It's just got a lot of issues that they can hopefully figure out for that third title.
Yeah.
I'm still very excited for the third.
What's your number five?
What's my number five? Any guesses? Cyberpunk. Phantom Liberty. Technically a deal. Well, technically an expansion, but I'm going to put it in my five because I think it deserves some recognition.
It's still a game you played.
Well, I put more hours into this than most other games this year, really.
Yeah.
I think I put 40 or 50 hours in.
Wow, just in Phantom Liberty?
Well, I did other stuff as well, but there was at least 20, 30 hours of Phantom Liberty.
As in you did other original Cyberpunk stuff?
Correct, but I also replayed this story a couple of times because there's different, you know, permutations that you can go through.
Yeah,
different sides you can take.
Permutations.
Yeah, different sides. Do you want to side with Idris or do you not want to side with Idris Elba, Solomon Reed? That's not really a spoiler. Anyway, Idris Elba, anything with his name on it, I'm in. Whether it's Hobbs and Shaw, Luther, Hijack.
Or Black Suit Man.
Dude is a beast. He's a legend of a guy. Great actor. Underrated actor, I think. When you think of him, you don't really think this guy's an amazing actor, but he actually is.
I agree.
He gets to show it in this game. He gets to show his full range. Although it is him playing every other character he's played before. You know what I mean? It is, you're getting Idris Elba, much like you're getting Keanu Reeves. You know, they're paying for those people for a reason. Project Red. You know what I mean?
You must have loved Thor, Dan, because Idris Elba's in Thor. All of them.
Is he really?
He's not in number four, is he?
He is too. He's in the first Thor.
Oh, he's in he's first in the, three. He's, in not, first he's three. Not in four, I don't think. He's Heimdall. Yeah,
doesn't he die in three?
Actually, no, he was in Love and Thunder, apparently. Yeah, he was in Love and Thunder. He was.
I can't remember.
He had a small cameo, I think.
Yeah, small cameo.
Well, besides that, he's got a very good reputation. I was in the moment, and it was good to see him in a game. He was in Modern Warfare back in the day, small little Modern Warfare 3, small little role. But this is where he really got to shine. And
Hijacked.
This narrative, I would say this was one of the best narratives of the year, if not the best. It got you in from the start. It had a great opening couple of hours that got you really back into the world. Especially for an expansion where we're known on this podcast not to really like DLCs and expansions all that much. It's tough for us to get back into a world. When it's a first-person shooter game, it's easier for me personally rather than like a God of War, a bit more complicated gameplay. So that probably helps as well.
Well, on that, Dan, just to quickly interrupt, do you think it's also because there was a story there to get you back in and it wasn't just like a... Oh, here's a bit of bonus content. Here's a compelling story to explore again.
Exactly. And you've got this new area that you're heading into and you've got to make your way through the trenches to get to this new area. I love that sort of thing where you're trying to get to something. For me, that, you know, it's like Baldur's Gate, getting to Baldur's Gate. It takes like 60 hours, 70 hours just to get to Baldur's Gate in Baldur's Gate 3. You always, you know, journey. You want to get to the mountain or whatever it is, God of War. You want to get to the mouse. So, and it's also kind of a redemption story for them. They put their head down after what was a bit of a disaster in terms of bugs and glitches, and we know the story. They really put their heads down to sort things out. Is it all the way there? Absolutely not. Many people are still having many issues. Luckily for me, barely any issues at all. Beautiful all the way through. Not that I was looking for them, but nothing game-breaking. It wasn't a single mission that fell flat. Every mission was very well curated, very well crafted, from the music, incredible music, to the cinematography, something you don't think about. You're choosing what dialogue as well. I always love that in a game when you're the decision maker. So it just pulls you through in this sort of James Bond-esque heist thriller, political. It's incredible. It really is. They've done a phenomenal job. So I highly recommend, pretty much anyone that plays this, I'd be shocked if you didn't like it, Phantom Liberty.
Yeah, I'm on my way there. I'm about 5 hours into normal Cyberpunk, so I'm on my way there. That's actually what I'm going to be playing next again. So after hearing all that, I'm super excited.
And very emotional too. Very emotional. Great acting. Very emotional in certain areas for me anyway, the paths that I took. Yeah, definitely enjoyed it. Number four, Vikarth.
Number four is, we just talked about it, Horizon Forbidden West. So we were talking somewhat negatively about it, but Jordan said correctly at the end, that does not mean that we think Horizon is a bad game.
Okay, let's not talk negative. Let's talk, what do we love about Horizon?
That's what I'm going to say. Yeah. So for all the faults, and when I say all the faults, there's not many, but for the faults Horizon Forbidden West have, I still believe that it is a phenomenal game. And it is one of the best of the year. I had such an incredible time with it.
It came out last year, by the way, everyone. But yeah.
Sorry, it did come out last year. But I guess the DLC came out this year. I played the game this year, I should say.
Yeah. All good.
Aloy, I still think there is a problem with Aloy. She's still somewhat of a compelling character. I still believe that she somewhat takes the back seat in her own narrative, but it's still a great game. I can't get enough of how fun the gameplay is. And I'll always be someone who is a proponent of upping the difficulty.
Upping the difficulty. How did I know you were going to say that?
It just forced me to use every item at my disposal. And it just stopped the game from being, oh, there's a thunder jaw. Let me do this, and this. And I can just, shut off, listen to a podcast and just shoot something on while the TV's muted and I don't care. Like when the game, Slaughter Spines were a one-hit kill with one of its, with this purple laser beam thing.
It's actually a great podcast game, by the way.
It is. For the exploration, it is. But playing it on a harder difficulty, it just became a lot harder and you had to make sure you had the right equipment and weapons. It made you think about, even the little perks and stuff. So I love that. Jordan knows this, and I've said Jordan knows this about 50 times this podcast, but anyway.
I do know things.
He does know that. But, even with God of War, I love the little perks and, the little, I really get into the nitty gritty of all that. So
you say Jordan, does that mean I don't know it, but Jordan does?
You don't know anything, man.
Yeah, you just don't know, Dan. You just don't know anything.
What does Jordan know that I don't know about Horizon?
Oh, how long is that?
No, it's more the that I love to get into the nitty gritty of the perks and what, the little, 5% extra burn damage and that sort of thing. So once again, another game with a great mini game in Strike. That was a lot of fun. And there was, there's plenty of activities for you to do. So you wouldn't fall short in that department. And still think the story in the world is phenomenal. Gaia and, they're such a great tool and AI and how it all plays into it. And I am still excited for what Horizon 3 will bring, and for what its faults are. It still shows it is such an incredible game. And I give it like the Metal Gear Solid Metal Gear Solid 5 treatment where I thought MGS5 story was really, I was not a fan of it at all, but the gameplay was absolutely phenomenal. And that is why Metal Gear Solid 5 will be one of my most cherished experiences I've ever played and why I love it so much. And Horizon, not obviously to the effect of Metal Gear Solid 5, but has that effect to me where given its faults, it's still a great game, a fun game. It was a great game.
It should be said the DLC did aim to address an issue that people have had with Aloy from the start, and it tried to get her, it tried to get us to get to know her a bit more as a person and to know like her values and that sort of thing, and especially when it came to like the relationship she made. And I had to laugh when people are like, oh, show us Aloy the person, show us Aloy the person. And then they do that. And then with how the DLC ends or can end, if you choose to go that way, people are like, oh, no, not like that. No, we didn't want you to show us like that. It's like, really? Like, did you really want this? Or did you just want like the same cookie cutter stuff you get all the time? You know? Anyways, the DLC is fantastic. Really fantastic. Don't like the last boss though of the DLC. I get what they were going for. Didn't enjoy it.
Would you agree that it was a step up in every department except writing?
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah, I would agree. And partly I think that is because, and I'm sure I said this on our Forbidden West review originally, I think the questions that Horizon Zero Dawn asks and the answers it gives are so much more satisfying than the questions and answers we get in Forbidden West.
Mm-hmm. So probably from a narrative point of view as well, but.
Yeah.
But which just stems off the writing, doesn't it?
Yeah. But, the writing is still phenomenal. And
no, that's the thing. It's still, I want to preface by saying it's still great writing.
Oh, it's still
for
so
the most, for the most part, I think this, the characters leave a lot to be desired for the miscellaneous characters.
Yeah, too many.
A lot of
my
games
favorite moment to that. Was when they were giving you a bit of exposition and he's like, we can skip this part. What do you say? Do you remember, Dan, when you first go into that
world? That's just dumb. Yeah, you can skip it.
Are you ready to hear this? Yeah. He's like, are you sure you want to hear this? I'm going to be here for a while. And I'm like, ugh. If you've got to say that, then you don't need to give that much. Yeah, you can think of a better way to expose all that, to exposit all. That being said, Horizon, I just feel like it's held to a higher standard, an unfair higher standard by many critics because it's a Sony first party. It's this, you know, so it has to be damn near perfect where any other company that makes a game like Horizon Forbidden West would be still praised fairly well. So, I still had so much fun with that game, gameplay point of view, so much fun.
It's up there with the best looking open world games ever made. I would say it's in the top five.
Oh, yeah. Oh, top three.
Yeah. Red Dead's up there. This has to be up there with the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. My number four. I'll keep this one short and sweet because, if I'm being honest, I don't remember everything about this game because it was at the beginning of the year, but it is Dead Space, so the Dead Space remake. Mm. So this was a January game, I'm pretty sure. So this is a long time ago, January or February. I played the original Dead Space. I didn't play Dead Space 2 or 3, so I've only played the Dead Space 1 and now the remake. And the remake just makes the whole thing so much better. Not that it needed to be made better, but it just has been made better. It's smoother, but it doesn't make it easy. The necromorphs got even spookier. The game got even more horror in it because you can clear an area and then out of nowhere now, sometimes necromorphs will just pop out, whereas in the original they wouldn't do that. So you're always on your toes. There's no days off. This game, when you're playing, when you're walking around the, what's the name of the ship?
Well, the Ishimura, but there's also, there's no loading now that you can go everywhere.
You can go everywhere. There's no loading. Yeah. Yep. They've remixed some of the levels and they've added some things in to sort of, and there's a bit of replayability with that as well, I'm pretty sure, if you go back and play it again. So the whole package is just better. This is the definitive way to play Dead Space now. It'll be fantastic if they move forward and do Dead Space 2. And then looking even more forward, if they go ahead and do a Dead Space 3, but do like a redux and do a remake that is completely different to what Dead Space 3 was, because it wasn't what people wanted in a Dead Space game. It was in that era where everything had to be co-op or multiplayer. And they made it co-op and it became more of an action game. And this was around the time that Resident Evil 6 came out too. And there was that same problem that people had where it became too much of an action game and lost its horror roots and everything and its challenge and the survival aspect of it. So that would be my hope for this because I'd love to play Dead Space 2 because from what I remember, it's better than the first.
Many people do think so. I'm one of the ones that think the first is better, but not by much. I mean, two's great as well.
Yeah.
Two's amazing, you know. And, yeah, I hope they continue on with it for sure. I think there's a lot they can do with another one. It just kind of falls prey to being January, as you said, just a very long time ago. And it also, look, it won that battle against Callisto. I mean, it's safe to say it won that battle fair and square quite easily, actually, even though I'm one of the only apologists for Callisto. But, yeah, no, Dead Space was fantastic. That was actually six on my list. Just missed out.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Well, what's your number four, big boy?
My number four is Marvel's Spider-Man 2.
Oh, now, I believe this is the only game that is on all three of our lists.
Yes, it is.
It is. We can get to your numbering if you want, or we can talk about it now. But it's basically, I was thinking about this the other day. I think it's the best game for a casual gamer ever made, I think.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
So I think if you were getting a PS5, this is the best game you could play if you're a new gamer to get into gaming. I couldn't think of a better game, really. Probably the other game would be Ratchet and Clank, another one from Insomniac.
Another Insomniac. But you know what's funny, Dan? That is Spider-Man. Like, that is just what Spider-Man is. Exactly. Like, if a lot of people would say, oh, like, I'm new to comics, what should I read? They'd go, oh, read Spider-Man.
Exactly. And he's just such a lovable character. I mean, you just can't not love him. He's always been my favorite Marvel character ever since as a kid. And, you know, people in this whole Marvel era where everything's sort of dying down after Avengers and everything's, you know, these games still are what keeping me in Marvel. Like, I still love these games that they're putting out. And people are worried about what Insomniac are doing in the future. Well, I say keep them coming if they're like this. This was emotional, fun. It was compelling. It ticked everything that you want in a game.
Yeah, so, and it did what we were hoping it would do. And we're going into it, we said, we know what we're getting. Spider-Man 2 is a bit of a known commodity. We know what we're getting. And then with a bit of a chip on their shoulder, Insomniac's gone, no, you don't. Bang, bursted through the ceiling of what we thought this game was going to be and just blew our expectations out of the water.
Yeah, I also love even the side characters, Jay Jamison, and you know, and some of those side quests, very emotional side quests.
Or just getting around the wingsuit, so much fun.
Wingsuit was a great addition. Yeah. It just had everything you wanted. I wanted more. I think I said that when we first reviewed it. I kind of wanted another 5 to 10 hours, but that's kind of the sweet spot you want to be in. So, no, definitely recommend Spider-Man 2. We'll talk about it again when it's on your list, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, good plan. Good plan. Number three.
I won't say much since Dan has covered it, but I will say Cyberpunk 2077.
But not Phantom Liberty.
So I actually just finished it a couple of days ago, put about 60, 65 hours into it, and pretty much I've done everything you can. I've done all the gigs and all the side missions and all the missions.
Did you do the cinnamon one? Cinnamon?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah.
That was crazy. Yeah, that was a good one. There's some really well-written ones.
And you can miss that, man.
You can. And I nearly did because I reloaded it because I just shot the cop like straight
away.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Crazy.
So I'm like, okay.
Crazy.
Yeah, so Dan knows that when I love a game, I will finish.
So Dan knows something now.
It's him who knows this. Where he knows I love an open world or a game when I finish all the side content well before the main story. And I don't even think I was halfway through the story when I'd pretty much had done most of, if not all of the gigs and all of the side missions that were available at the time, which is not 80% of them.
Sorry to cut you off. Are you talking about like Pan Am and Judy and all that sort of stuff? Were you female V or male, by the way?
I was male.
Male.
And then also all the gigs there, you know, like all the different peoples of the different areas, those gigs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, finished all those. I was level 50.
So the monks and the clown and all that. Yep.
the grenade nose clown. Yeah, yep. I was level 50 street cred 50 well before the main story was progressing. So I just really fell in love with the game, and it was just phenomenally well written. This is the biggest thing I could praise about Cyberpunk, and it is in the praise I'm giving it. I cannot think of an open world game that does it better by a long shot than what Cyberpunk does, and that is the writing of its side missions and side content. Mm. It is so insanely varied. I cannot believe that every side mission, every gig, even gigs where side missions are more story-based and gigs are more like activities, but they were still all so well written. Every area was a completely different location, completely different skill checks to go into those areas. There was all like full, written stories about backstories to these characters and choices to make. And even the smallest 5-minute gig, there was you knew the character's backstory, what they were doing, why they're doing it. There might have been a choice to choose how you want to deal with them. New building where you can do different skill checks if you want to hack using technical ability or bash open a door with your strength. It was just, I can't believe that even for the littlest of things, the littlest of side content, they put so much effort into the writing and the direction and the gameplay. And they just answered that criticism, that Witcher 3 criticism, so well, where the biggest gripe of the Witcher 3 was the fetch quests. And they didn't just answer it. They knocked it out of the park. I cannot think of a game that, maybe GTA, right? But I cannot think of a game where its side content is so insanely varied, even for the littlest of missions. And I just had so much fun with this game. And even
What was your favorite side mission?
The Cinnamon one was really good.
Yeah.
I can't think of the top of my head what the best side
mission. Do you remember the Flaming Crotch guy?
The Flaming Crotch?
Did you do that one?
I would have.
I'm just rattling them off now. Or what about the homeless kind of guy? And you tip him every time you go past. There's so many, man. You probably missed
that. I liked the vending machine one. That was so random.
Yeah, that's a guy from Detroit. Yeah, that's Connor. Yeah. Detroit. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the, Ward's quests or Judy's quests or Pan Am's one, their lines. But, even the little ones, like I loved Dan. My favorite side mission was, and it sucks because I didn't get the resolution I wanted, the mayor. And the guy running for mayor, and it's like this secret organization.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Like, that was insane. And you feel bad because it's like, even where Johnny, you're assembling Johnny's band or you're doing that mission for that metal girl, Wizzy, and she like husband's like trying to change her, and you wonder who's done the right thing. And then I had to live with the choice of like what I did and things like that. Because in the end, I'm like, oh crap, I think I made the wrong choice there.
But what about the one on your next door neighbor in the apartment?
Yeah.
How good was that?
That was, I don't know if there's different endings.
Oh, you got the sad ending.
But it's really so well done. And even, I think a game like Cyberpunk where it's urban, real world, you can get really lazy in the gameplay where you could just say it's just guns and shooting. But the way they did quick hacks, I went full into that. That was such a unique aspect, I thought, of Cyberpunk, where my build was based around quick hacks. And because the reason is because it was the most differentiating factor between, of Cyberpunk, right? And I just loved that mechanic. I'm playing Cyberpunk, after the 2.0 update. So the skill tree is completely different. I never knew I think I played 10 hours of the original Cyberpunk, but I barely remember it. So, the skill tree was great. It was just so many good skills and everything was meaningful then. It was
aren't you glad you
meaningful.
Waited?
I know. Now. And yeah. Even just things like buying apartments and buying guns and attachments and finding legendaries and buying cars, all of that. It wasn't grindy. I got rich pretty quick, like by doing gigs. It wasn't a grind. I was able to spend money and enjoy things like buying clothes and, stuff that, in a typical game takes hours of grinding. I was able to do it, and just, it was like this free world I could run into. I loved Night City. I thought it was very well designed, and it was just such a well-written game because what people underestimate about Night City is that, yeah, look, it's no like Los Santos where you've got all the different biomes, but and GTA is still second to none, don't get me wrong. But Cyberpunk, so many buildings were explorable and each building was so unique. And every side mission or gig required you probably most likely to go into a building. And it was all so unique. And I'm just so thoroughly impressed with Cyberpunk. It's just such a well-written game, well-written story. Keanu, like, he was a Hollywood actor, and he was in it for so much of the game. Even little gigs and side missions, he would pop up and say his piece about things. And I'm like, they could have just not needed him for that stuff. They could have just had him for the main story, but he was there for of the game.
Yeah.
He reminded me of Mark Hamill in Arkham Knight, where he's always there.
Are you going to play Phantom Liberty now? Is that next
up? Yeah. I'm taking a breather from Cyberpunk. I played about 60 hours in a week, so it was a lot. I was playing a lot of Cyberpunk. So I'm just going to take a break from it. I'm playing Valhalla right now, and I'm playing
Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Yeah, man, that's the best Valhalla there is. Playing God of War Valhalla, and I'm probably going to go back to Red Dead and a few other things. So
anyway, Cyberpunk. Yeah.
Cyberpunk, can't get enough of it. Phenomenal game.
Beautiful.
Deserves what a great redemption is what I'll say.
Jordan, number three.
My number three is Sea of Stars.
Nice.
The only indie.
I was going to say a cute little indie game, but it's not little at all. It's definitely cute, and it's full of heart, and it's really charming, and it's got really lovable characters and a really incredible story, but it's not little. It took me like 35 hours to beat, but it's such a throwback that has been modernized to perfection. So it's a turn-based RPG in the style of like older Final Fantasies and that sort of thing, where you sort of is like a top-down or like isometric view where you're watching your like little characters move around, engage in like turn-based battles with like that active turn-based battle where you've got to like push the button to time the attack to get the extra bonus of damage and that sort of thing. It is just such a fantastic game. It is the very reason why. Well, not the very reason why, but it's such a good justification for why Sony will occasionally handpick games to put out for free on PS Plus on release that many people wouldn't try unless it was on for free. Because I remember hearing about this game and looking at it and going, probably not for me. And then when I saw that it was getting fantastic reviews and I saw that it was included in a subscription I already had, I was sold. I was, I'm there. And I don't want to say I was addicted to it, but you're really enjoying a game when it's all you can think about when you're away from it. And I was at school or at work and I'm thinking like, oh man, I can't wait to go home and play Sea of Stars. Might be able to get like just half an hour in just to play a bit here, get half an hour in there afterwards as well. And yeah, a fantastic game. I didn't achieve the true ending, which I have a pretty good idea of what the true ending is going to be. So it's probably just something go and like look up after.
How do you achieve that? Play it again.
Something happens towards the end of the game and then you're given like an extra challenge to go and do. Like you've got to go light these seven pillars or something like that. And then something happens. And yeah, just I think I've sort of got spoiled for it a little bit for what it is. And so I'm like, okay, that's like, I assumed something like that might happen anyway. But I didn't feel compelled to go and do the true ending because I felt like the story was done. And yeah, because I was spoiled, I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to do this and that's going to happen. Amazing. My only real critique of Sea of Stars, the climax of the story drags on. They sort of build up all this tension and you're like, oh my gosh, wow, here we go. And then it's still like another 5 or 6 hours where it really should have been 2.
What's the character development like?
If I'm being honest, the main character development you look at and the main character that everyone loves is a character, and I believe his name's Garth. And he's like, so you are one of these twins that you get to choose who you're going to be the main one of. And then you get your characters that join your party as you go. And yeah, I believe his name's Garth. He's like the MVP of the game. He is just like the most wholesome, side character you could ask for. The twins go off to go and do training for years. They go off into this temple to go and do training at the very beginning of the game. And he just like waits around for years and then like we'll like sneak them food and we'll sneak them things and that sort of thing. Yeah. So the character development is good. The twins and that sort of stay the same a little bit from what I remember.
The twins are the main characters, right?
Yeah, they're the main characters. And they sort of grapple with the role they play in all that's going on around them. But at the end of the day, the MVP of the whole show is Garth.
Yeah. What would turn people away from it or turn people onto it?
The turn base.
Turn base.
It's not for everyone because it can be a little bit slow.
Like Baldur's Gate, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it can be a little bit slow. But it is quite easy to get the hang of. It's easy to get the hang of, but then there's so much thinking and strategy that needs to go into it as well in terms of ordering your attacks and that sort of thing. So, yeah. Yeah. What's your number three, big boy?
My number three was a battle between Alan Wake 2 and Resident Evil 4 remake. And the winner, well, is Resident Evil in the end. So Alan Wake 2 is going to be my third slot. Now, this is a game I want you two to play eventually. I'm on my knees begging you to play this game.
To finish the story.
Finish the story. Vike's got no idea that reference.
Is this Alan Wake?
No.
Or is he?
A wrestler, Cody. Cody Rhodes, a wrestler. He wants to finish his story.
Finish the story.
But he's talking about Cody Rhodes. Isn't he Stardust?
Yeah.
Because he was on the Arrow. Stephen Amell had beef with Cody Rhodes.
Yeah. But he's talking about Alan Wake's his number three.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Alan Wake 2, number 3.
Have you played Control, Dan, and the DLC?
No, I've got it downloaded. I want to play it this month. Yeah, I am going to play it. It probably would have helped going into this game because there's a lot of sort of connection there, obviously, because he loves to connect all these worlds and things like that. And you always rave on about Control. But I think this is their best game they've ever made, Remedy. For sure, especially in game direction in terms of the way the story is told, the narrative structure of it, and the chances they take throughout the game that you don't see in any other games, just because it basically is a true detective game and it's slow at times. It works, you know, it works. Not many games are doing this. Not many games have a full-blown musical in them. You know, it's an incredible sequence that, you know, probably one of my favorite levels of the year, if not my favorite of the year, full-blown sequence. So, and from that moment on, I knew I was witnessing basically a masterpiece of a game. Graphics are phenomenal. Music is brilliant. Every chapter that you play at the end will have a custom piece of music that they've made that will end the chapter by different artists that kind of tell a story, which I've never seen before. Can you name a game that does that? I can't. So there's all these different things that they're just doing that you just haven't seen, and it all comes together in a way. You know, even the main mechanic of the game, the detective board where you go and putting the pieces of the puzzles together, you guys have seen it, where you go into her mind and put the clues together. And you don't have to play the previous Alan Wake. I don't believe you do. Yeah, it helps. It's a contained story. I don't think you have to play it. So it's just ticking every box. And it came at a great time right at the end and blew me away. So Alan Wake 2 is my third best game. And I've called it a masterpiece.
You have. That speaks highly of the things that come above it. It's exciting for me, the prospect of going to play Alan Wake, because I hear about the things that happen in it, in not story beat, but just like the idea of Alan riding and then like that manifesting in the levels that you're playing. Is that sort of what happens?
Yeah, and it changes what's in front of you because he's writing the story as it goes on. I mean, when have you seen that in a game? Not often.
Yeah, it just makes me really excited. It is something that is on my list and something that I will get to, hopefully sooner rather than later.
And I love Saga Anderson as well. I loved her levels just as much as Alan Wake's levels.
Yeah, it just seems like such a like melting pot of creativity of so many ideas that have sort of just sing together, which is great.
Yeah, it's not like Spider-Man 2. Let's get that straight. It's a very artsy game.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's different, but in a good way. So it was very refreshing for me. Very refreshing experience. Yeah.
And awesome, dude.
Yeah, I look forward to you guys hopefully playing one day. Number two, Vikarth.
My number two is Spider-Man 2. So Dan's already talked about it. It was such a great job by Insomniac. I truly believe they improved on every bit from Spider-Man 1. And the inclusion of Miles and how it's both of them and Venom and Kraven. I thought Kraven was phenomenal. I wish he was there more. And how all these story elements tied together, how, you know, you would think it's such a Peter Parker story with Venom and Kraven. You would think that Miles would take the back seat, but, you know, he had a lot with Martin Lee and the way that all worked. They didn't neglect him. They didn't neglect Miles. And it was just so much fun. The side activities were great. I don't think, you know, it sort of answered that question of repetition where because the combat loop was so much fun and there was a lot of variety in the enemies, it kept you really engaged. The main story is really its strength. The narrative was actually so strong and so well written. You felt like you were in a, you know, comic. You felt like you were in a comic book and it was really well done. I still had my slight gripes about the story where, you know, I wish Kraven was there more and the way that ended. And
do you think Kraven was better than Venom? Because I kind of do, low-key kind of
Yeah, I wanted Kraven to – I know Venom is the big one, but, yeah, I just really wanted Kraven to be there way more. And he was so – like when, you know, he's so menacing. The suits are great. The abilities and the upgrades are great. I loved it. I didn't feel like anything was really redundant. It allowed you to play the game where you wanted the abilities that Miles had, the abilities that Peter had, and it was just so much fun, you know, and I just really, really thoroughly enjoyed the open world of Spider-Man. We could talk about it. We haven't done a Spider-Man 2 spoiler cast, I guess, but in the spoiler cast, if we ever do it, I would love to talk about what I thought about, you know, MJ and some of the story choices they made with Kraven and stuff like that, but putting all that aside.
Do you like MJ?
Great game. I just thought MJ really undercut some of the story. So, you know, it really undercut some of the, like, this is what I was going to say. And I remember thinking this. Kraven's enemy, you know, Kraven's bad guys, they're, you know, his goons. They're actually a lot harder than traditional goons, right? Like they had some, you know, long range crossbows and all this sort of stuff. And I don't akin it to what I'm about to compare it to, but I still thought, wow, they're scary. They're, you know, Kraven's a big bad and these guys are scary and it's exciting. But then you just see MJ with a pistol running around and these guards are meant to be like Kraven, trained by Kraven. You know, they have these heightened senses. They can see what's, you know, the flickering of the wind or a footstep, but MJ can just run up behind him and taser them, and it just really undercut the scariness. And one gang of enemies that I was really scared of that I wish hit these heights was, I forgot what they're called in The Last of Us Part 2. The wolves?
Sephirites.
The Sephirites, where they whistle?
Seraphs.
Yeah. The Seraphs. And Seraphites, yeah. I was so scared when I first got hit by one. And, you know, they couldn't, you know, you couldn't communicate. Like, they don't communicate. Their whistles are like, crap. Where are they coming from? I found it so genuinely hard and scary whenever they came, whenever I encountered them. And it was so awesome. It was such an awesome moment. And they could have had Seraph potential, but then MJ runs around with the pistol and it just undercut everything. Like, so I liked MJ for the story. Like, she was great narrative.
But I don't understand what you mean by undercut, though.
Like, it's just, they're not scary anymore when
but it's not MJ a scary with a pistol. Game.
No,
I know of, like, saying, he's saying, like, having, like, a healthy fear of them in, like,
yeah.
combat and like,
yeah, but she's supposed to be the badass. You're supposed to breeze through with her. That's the whole point.
I know. I know Silver Sable like trained her and all this sort of stuff, but come on, these guys are trained by Kraven.
Yeah.
These guys are meant to be the peak of hunting and senses and knowing footsteps, and MJ can just run up behind them with a pistol and
guys, we're talking about a game where a guy was bitten by a spider and now he swings around like one. Come on.
Nah. There is reality within the universe, you know. Spider-Man can, you know, fly around.
Okay, so what would you have done? What would you have done with MJ?
I thought narratively she was great.
What a compromise, man.
Just wouldn't have had MJ sections.
I mean, Jordan's onto something, because MJ was great in the story. MJ was great in the story, but she didn't need to play as her. Those moments could have been done elsewhere.
Let's be honest. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what their reasoning behind wanting
to break it up. It's to break it up.
Yeah. It's a spider drones. But then, see, they could have broke it up with Miles, because Miles did have different abilities. And I did feel like, oh, this is healthy. Like, I'm playing as Peter. And then I did feel like it broke up a bit with Miles because he had different abilities. Like, not heaps, but they could have just been a bit more creative with that. Maybe another hero, you know, Prowler.
But
I don't
Spider-Man, but you could switch between them freely. Remember that.
Yeah, I agree. But they just could have been done better. But that being said, the narrative is what I really loved about the game. And that's why I said MJ was so well done narratively. She was great in the narrative.
Yeah.
And the gameplay was so much fun. The swinging, the traversal, obviously, second to none. They added more mechanics to make it fun, like the wingsuit, like the traversal abilities. The worlds were just so much more populated. The streets, you know, using that SSD. Loading was instantaneous. That quick travel is insane in its speed. And the, you know, the Mysterio missions, they were just a lot of fun. And that's what I really loved about it. The gameplay, I never got bored of the combat, trying to hit a high combo, quick firing and using all these gadgets. Once again, Dan Allen Gaming, I played it on hard. It forced me to use all the gadgets. It forced me to use, like, I couldn't on that hard. I think it was the hardest difficulty where you couldn't, you know, not New Game Plus, but you couldn't play, you know, if you didn't have your abilities ready to go, it made it really hard to get out of a fight, especially with the stronger, bigger guys. You needed to rely on your abilities and your gadgets. So it just made it really fun. I actually used every gadget and I knew what to do where in the previous Spider-Man, where I don't think I played it on hard, I didn't really use much of the gadgets. I was just punching and kicking.
Did you play the hardest difficulty, or I played the second hardest?
I played the hardest available, so in the non-New Game Plus, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, and yeah, the hits were brutal. It took a lot of your health. So it just made the game so much fun. And
What you're saying in this session is that you find games more fun the harder they are.
It's more that the difficulty forces you to actually explore the game to its full potential. So you're not just mashing square and triangle, but you're using different gadgets.
Why can't you do that in normal difficulty?
Because you don't need to. You don't need to use gadgets. You can just beat everyone.
So you want to be forced to.
Well, the same thing I said for Horizon Forbidden West. You know, if the game's on normal, you can just rush in, use your, you know, explosive bow and just take them out. But on the harder difficulties, you might have to weak, you know, get their weak points, get the weapons off so that they don't one hit kill you, use different, you know, they're vulnerable to electricity. So I'll use the shock arrow and the shock mines and traps. And like, you've just got to play smarter.
Well, that's a different mindset to a lot of gamers, what you're saying there.
But what I'm saying is that had I played Horizon on easy, I would have never done any of that. I would have just run in and
hit it. I can guarantee that's how Jordan played Horizon and he had a great time. Am I wrong, Jordan?
Yeah, but I also did, like, I think a key thing Vike is saying there is, like, you can just run in. Like, you don't have to. Vike keeps saying you can run in. Like, yeah, I didn't run in. I only played on normal for Horizon and for Spider-Man, but, like, I still used my full array of abilities. I still felt challenged as well while doing it. Like, I didn't feel like it was a walk in the park every time. I didn't use everything in Horizon because I felt a bit overwhelmed by the amount of things that you could actually get as well. And I didn't see the utility in everything. But it is just preference. I personally don't like playing, like, I'm over playing games on, like, hardest difficulty now because – I'm just like, I'm here for, like, I'm in a stage now where I'm, unless it's like Rocket League, where I'm there for the gameplay. Most of the time now when I'm playing games, I'm there for the story. And I, not that I want to just cakewalk it, but I'm like, let's make this still challenging and make it so that I'm not just like mashing, but let's also like, I don't want to have to spend 4 hours.
That's what
hours
I'm saying. That's completely different to how Vike plays.
Yeah, but which is fine.
But Jordan and I think
completely different.
I still think Jordan and I are actually in agreement a lot more than we think, because I don't want difficulty to be grind. Like we've talked about with this, where sometimes a lot of games will just make things more difficult by making enemies spongier and it just takes longer. And that's not what I want, but it's more that you can run in, but the harder the difficulty, the less you can run in, like the less of an option that is, which means that you have to be smart about the way you're playing things. And it just forces you to be creative. And I think it's flexing the creativity. You know, you have to use gadgets. You have to use your abilities. You can't just blindly run in and, you know, try just button mashing or hitting them. Where same thing with God of War. You know, you've got to use your runics. You've got to use your abilities and that sort of thing, where on the harder difficulties, because while you can run in, you are going to encounter that grind. You're going to take hours and hours. So harder difficulty, I want the same time of encounter, like the encounter time that Jordan has on a normal difficulty and I have on the harder difficulty should be the same. It's just in order to get that lower time, I've got to, on the harder difficulty, be a bit more creative about it and explore the mechanics of the game more. And I think trying to flesh that out more, you know, so... Because when I played the original Spider-Man, those gadgets I used were just gimmicks to me. I never used them. I just was punching and kicking them. They were cool and all that, but I didn't really use them because I didn't need to use them. But when you get to a point where you have to use them, I don't know, it just makes it more fun because you're relying on the entire tool set that you're using.
I kind of find myself in the middle of you two. I kind of like a balance of easy and hard games throughout the year. You know, I kind of mix and match. I don't sway one way or another.
I just don't want grind. That's all I don't want. You know,
No, I don't want grind. No one wants grind. I don't think. Yeah. No one wants grind. Jordan, number two?
My number two is such a latecomer to the pack. Like, we are talking like buzzer beater stuff to get there before we did this episode. And it is God of War Ragnarok Valhalla.
Wow, DLC makes the list.
DLC makes the list, and it's a testament, and it's a DLC from me, the guy who never really plays DLC.
I know, but you are a God of War.
I am a God of War fan, but that's what makes this DLC so special. If you are just a casual God of War fan, and like you have a bit of an idea or no idea about the original trilogy, you can play this DLC. And you'll enjoy it really well. You'll have a great time with it and you'll learn some things about Kratos' past, I'm sure, and it'll be great. However, if you're someone like me and like Dan and like Vike now who have played the original games, there is so much in Valhalla to get excited about. And what I love about it is there's so much restraint shown. They could have just gone, here's this thing that happened here and this thing that happened here that we're calling back to and all this. However, again, it comes back to carefully picking the things that are going to resonate with the player and are going to make them think and are going to make conversations with Mimir interesting as you're going through Valhalla. Because the premise, for those who don't know, is it is a bit of a roguelike where at the start of a run, you choose the shield you want to use, you choose the... like L3, R3, what's that called? Like rage meter thing rage. You're going to use. Yeah. You're going to pick one of those and then you go through, you battle through like a room of enemies. You then can choose the next room to go through, you battle through another room. But having said that, while you're doing it, Valhalla is pulling from Kratos' memories and constructing these things around his memories. And that's sort of all I really want to say, because some of the things that happen, again, as a longtime God of War fan, had me flipping out. And like, not like throwing my controller up in the air, like, oh my gosh, but just going like, man, how cool is this? I'm being rewarded for what is almost 20 years of fandom.
Which one? Let's quickly do a spoiler. Oh, Vike hasn't seen it.
I have.
Oh, okay.
I finished
have you finished it, Vike?
Yeah.
Just
okay. So, like, one quick spoiler, even as like you're going through, and then you get to the end of a run, and then you hear someone talking to you, and it's like, oh my god, I know exactly who this is, and it turns out, again, spoiler for Valhalla, that it's the god Helios who, in God of War 3, Kratos rips his head off. And then when you get to the next level of Valhalla to go through, instead of having Mimir on your hip, you have Helios's head talking to you, which is just like, that's so cool. It's so cool.
Have you hit the credits, Shorts?
Yes, yeah, so I've done the credits and okay, I've done one run after the credits.
Yeah, me too. I've done like one or two. So it's, Jordan,
how long
so
did
right.
it take you to get to the credits?
I don't really know because I didn't keep track. Mm. I could probably have a look at my trophies and tell you. Oh, no, because it's over days. Like it took me a few days to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty meaty for what
it was. Pretty meaty and there's heaps of replay. Like I've done the credits now and I'm going back through because when you go through, there's different memories pulled up each time that you're going to then explore. Yeah. With Mimir as you go through. So I'm like, what else is there to find? What else? Not that you have to go looking for it. Like, what else am I going to see as I go through? So I think it's an amazing experience for the casual God of War fan who just has fallen in love with 2018 and Ragnarok and has a bit of a cursory understanding of what's happened before. And then it is so rewarding for the long-term fan or the fan who's played the original and appreciates them for what they are.
And do you think it's sort of unused content or reused content done smartly?
Yeah.
I could see that this is something that was meant to go in.
Especially a certain boss fight.
Potentially. I do think maybe the mode, but I don't think the story beats that are delivered through the mode would have been put in.
No, not that. But all the assets are from the main game and,
yeah.
you know. All that sort of stuff, yeah. Enemies.
But it's so clever. And it's free. Did we mention that? It's free.
Yeah, it is free. Yeah. Which automatically bumps it up a few points for me.
Yeah.
Because they could have easily charged 15, 20.
Yep. It's the best DLC I've ever played.
I would have paid it. Doubt. Really? Yeah. The best you've ever played? That is a high price.
I can't think of any off the top of my head right now that would beat it. It is just so fantastic.
It's just one of the best. It's not like hardcore like an Elden Ring, but to me, it hits because I think the one thing is God of War allows me to rush down where I can't really do that in Elden Ring and I'm 100% a rush down guy. So it just hits me right in the right spot. But, I don't have to be patient.
Number two for me, Resident Evil 4 Remake is... As you said before, you said the best DLC, Valhalla. This is the best remake ever made for me. Ever made.
Ooh, big call.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's in a league of its own. It one-ups an original, which is an absolute classic. Resident Evil 4 is considered, an absolute.
One of the greatest.
One of the greatest. And this actually, steps it up in pretty much every manner. It's, I've gushed about this all year. Everyone knows I'm a big Resident Evil guy, so it wasn't a big surprise. It's probably a surprise that it's not my number one, to be honest. I thought it's a sure bet for being my favorite.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. But, I mean, talk about fun. Man, this game is fun and replayable and smooth. What a year it's been. And this came March. They've changed a few things of the story for the better. It's just the perfect Resident Evil game for me. Brilliant. All right, number one.
One question I did have for you, Dan, was do you think you need to play any of the others before number four?
Nah, absolutely not. Nah, don't need to. And as we said, that's it's a strength. I mean, you've played two already, so two's the one you would play into four.
Yeah, I've done one playthrough of two. Like, I've done the Leon playthrough.
Yeah, and that's all you need because Leon's the main character in this game. It's the same guy. So you're set. But you don't even have to play two. I mean, if Vykoth, for instance, was going to play it, I'd recommend playing two because two's probably the second best remake of all time.
Who is?
And I'm not even being like, silly.
It's unreal how good it looks.
Yeah. I'm not even being silly. Like, it too was widely known as like the best remake until this one came out. And I think it helps that they've got some people from those original games still there, still got that essence, you know, still got that helps, I think, a lot. So, yeah. What's your number one, Vike, of 2023? Well, even number though it came out in 2020.
I played in 2023 was Death Stranding. And I, insane. What a game. What an absolute game.
What a game.
The story is, I mean, I don't even get half of it, and I think it's one of the best stories I've ever experienced. Like, it's the gameplay loop. Like, how does he make this fun? I don't understand. How did he make this game fun when I'm just walking around and falling over? And, the weapons, like, there wasn't many, but it was just the most fun. I mean, there were, but still, it was just the most fun game.
And well, what was fun about it?
I can't explain it, Dan. I just can't explain it. It's
the repetition. It's the repetition of doing it, and it's seeing how much better, well, not even how much better, because it's not even a skill game, but it's how much more efficient you can become as you continue forward. And, like, you see how much you struggle to deliver, like, one thing as you make your first delivery, and then with your last deliveries when you're doing, like, zip lines and stuff with, like, massive things on you. And then just, like, understanding how the mechanics all work and interact with each other, like with the time fall and everything.
Yeah.
Is it a new genre?
It's a Strand game.
It's a Strand-type game. I mean, the funny thing is I didn't get much help. So I don't know. Like, the strandiness of it, I didn't really get much help from people. I don't know. But maybe because I'm, like, really late to the party, but I felt like
You're not online.
No, I was online. I got a lot of outposts and stuff, but I never got any roads. I got a lot of post boxes. I just didn't get many roads, which is the main thing you wanted. So I'm pretty sure I built like 80 to 90% of the roads.
So you really helped someone out.
Oh, I know. I really helped someone
That could be, Vike, because you are quite late to the party. So I remember when I played it, not even at launch. I played it a little bit after. Yeah, I remember roads popping up out of nowhere and stuff. So it could be time and where you're playing it.
I think I had it easy. I had zip lines everywhere. I mean, it was, I must have got lucky.
Maybe that was to my benefit because I was having fun building roads. I literally, Dan, built road from one end to the other, outside of the map, all by myself with no help from anyone.
Someone did that for me, yeah. It was fantastic.
The amount of ceramics and I had to, but they made it fun because I'd just go on mule base runs. I'd load up this huge truck, get the non-lethal weapons out, whatever it is, and just have a lot of fun and just raid and raid and raid and fill myself and drive back and go again and upgrade weapons and, you know, you get something better. And Jordan, like Jordan said, it's the efficiency that real, like when you get more and more efficient and better at it and you're five-starring or three-starring, is it? And I maxed most outposts or most delivery areas. So I think there was maybe one or two. Like I got a lot of 3 stars. So,
but did you play them?
I don't think I did. And
how did you find the music? You too.
Yeah, mate. Low roar.
Because you guys aren't really music guys when it comes to this. Like it's not something you really think about. But did this one transport you? Did it give you a feeling? Yeah.
Feeling, I don't know, but I loved it. Yeah, it did give you that, especially when you're just traversing down this open field and a song just starts playing. And,
that first one, as you go over that first hill and you go down and then that song starts playing, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that it is phenomenal. And I just can't get over how much fun I had just, I don't know, loading a motorbike or loading a truck, getting floating carriers and just walking around and getting excited. Oh, I'm going to get all these resources. I'm going to 3-star this base. And the rewards were great too, like getting skeletons and, you know, weapons and stuff as rewards. It was like, that was the other thing that Kojima does really well. Like he actually still understands the basic gamer psychology of you still need in-game rewards. And It's, yes, there's a narrative reward where you're continuing the narrative, but you're still getting rewarded as a gamer. You're getting new equipment and that sort of thing. Like every achievement I did in terms of one starring or two starring, three starring was I wanted to, but also what drove me is, oh, I'm going to get this non-lethal weapon. Oh, I'm going to get the speed, the power skeleton, where a game like Starfield, where they're like, yeah, you should be happy to explore and open an empty moon because that's the astronauts.
Yeah, I played Starfield. Shut your fucking
Dan,
mouth.
You, nah,
shut
Dan,
your
nah,
mouth.
Nah, I don't feel like, Mike, you haven't played it, mate.
Nah, 100%. They said, shut your Bethesda mouth. Said, you should be happy going to an empty moon because the astronauts in real life went to the moon and felt a sense of wonder. That is the dumbest, most
I didn't go to an empty
stupidest,
planet.
Most
I think I went to one
thing I've ever heard.
I went to one in my
but I'm just saying
80 hours.
One, I'm just saying one guy, one game is rewarding you for completing an activity, and one another game is saying the experience you the experience what you experience should be the reward.
Cherry
it's, picking. No, it's. I don't think it is. Anyone, but write
but
tell
like,
me.
But is but like, but do you need to do something in a game just to tick a box, or can you not just do it to be like, wow, I did this?
Exactly.
But that's where it misses. Where they thought that exploring an empty moon for 10 hours is
but no one's
is
this doing
amazing
that.
Experience.
No one's
no
doing
because no one's playing the game. That's problem.
That's not the game.
It's 100 hours of barrenness, Dan. It is 100 hours of barren
it's not,
planets.
Nah, it's
but
not,
oh, what I
it's
what
not
I'm
a perfect
saying
game,
is,
but it's not that.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it's he still treats you like a human, a gamer, and doesn't try to the audacity and the arrogance to say, well, you don't deserve a like there's no reward here because what you just did, that's the reward. You know, it kind of gives me the vibe of the internship where you don't need to get paid. Your experience is the real pay here. And this is coming from a guy who worked at a, you know, for an internship with no money, like no salary, where the experience was a reward. But it just gives you that vibe with the
so you're a
games,
hypocrite,
right? Well, I didn't experience.
Don't worry, but, we've all been hypocrites on this show once or twice.
But well, that good. You know, I needed the experience. This one, I'm paying $70 to play, but it's. I just think you know, the people. Some games still need to remember that the basics, like. Simple gameplay rewards is still something to go for. It's still why do you think I was so excited to do all the Valhalla in God of War, like all those different tiers in that last place, even though I didn't need to. I got 6 out of 6, I could move on to the final battle. The rewards, the perks, and then the reward of that being so overpowered for that final fight and enjoying using everything. It's just yes, some people don't need it, but
I think the hole in your argument, Vike, is it's not just a game of you walking around a planet. Like that is one, there may be planets that are empty and that is the experience you're supposed to have. But then there is a whole other part of the game, which is you going and doing that. And again, I haven't played it, so I can't really comment. You shouldn't really be commenting because you haven't played it either.
Yeah, and I've played 80 hours.
Yeah, which I think that's the hole in your argument. Yeah, okay, I understand what you're saying. If the whole game was, no, it's just an experience, that's that, I'd be with you. But that's just one part of it. Because like I just played Avatar.
Oh.
And one of the cool things about doing Avatar was just flying around, not for a reward, not for a loot, not for anything, just the act of flying around and seeing the planet.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. But what I'm saying is that wears off fairly quickly, where in Starfield, because it's something that's core to the game, where exploration is so core to that game, it's not going to wear off. It's always going to require you to walk 10 minutes just to get to one location or one point of interest and then barely being anything there and then going all the way back to your ship in
it's
a barren
true.
Planet. It's true. I've watched so much gameplay of Starfield, and I've seen a guy land on a moon, have to walk 2 minutes through the rocks to get to a outpost with a couple of items there and then go all the way back. There's nothing on the way to that area and nothing on the way back. It's just you go into that place, and what I'm saying is if Jordan's right, if you do have that experience, but when it wears off and – what do you do once it wears off?
Sorry.
In a game like Starfield, it doesn't wear off. Well, it does wear off, but they don't give you more. But, yeah, I just think the basics of gamer psychology with rewards, Death Stranding knocked it out of the park story-wise and I think gameplay-wise. And I don't know. Yeah. Just it's
and it came
it's
out
such
in 2020,
a phenomenal game.
By the way,
I loved it. The director's cut came out in 2022, didn't it? 2021.
So it's only 2 years ago.
But I didn't even play the director's cut. I'm playing the
original. Oh my god.
No wonder no one's on helping you. Frick, you know, he's playing the oldest version possible.
That's probably why, Vike.
Yeah, probably.
Why didn't you play the director's on PS5?
Because I had the original. So
yes, it was a
$10
upgrade.
It was a $10 upgrade, mate.
Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe
you lost the plot. All right.
Maybe I did play the director's cut. I don't know.
Anyway, Jordan, you go to your number one and I'll see
my
if you played.
One. So my number one, I was silent, pretty silent while. Oh, no. I don't know. Vike and Dan have already mentioned it. It's the game that we all had on ours. My number one, my game of the year for 2023 was Spider-Man 2. Mm. And Spider-Man 2 is the perfect follow-up and the perfect escalation of what a Spider-Man game could be. And not only that, it is this game very easily could have been Peter Parker Spider-Man and Miles is there as well. And instead, it really should have been called Spider-Men or Spider-Mans because it was a perfect blending of Peter and Miles' story. And they had their own moments. They had their moments together. Then they'd go and each have their own moments. And then they'd come back and have this client, come back together for their own story beat, for their shared story beats again. It is just exactly what a superhero game should be. It's lighthearted at times. It's emotional at times. It'll get you laughing. It'll get you feeling for the characters. It is fun to play. It's fun to move around. Dan was privy to my messages, to my like my reactions to things as they're happening towards the end of the game. And man, the things that if you are like, you know, somewhat of a Spider-Man fan and you have a bit of an idea of, especially with some of the things around some of the villains that appear in the game and the routes that this story goes towards the end, every time it just kept escalating and escalating and escalating. And I was sitting there going like, they're not really going to do it. Oh my God, they just did that. They're not going to, surely. Oh my gosh, they just did that. And that happening like five or six times in a row. It just goes so many cool places. And then where it ends and how it ends and what's set up for what the next game is going to be, the mind's already spinning. And can I be honest, you know how when Spider-Man 2 was coming and I kept crapping on about Venom and I was like, it's going to be Venom. Venom will be the poster child for this. It'll be this. I already have like what the poster child for the next one will be. I wouldn't say it's a poster child, but I think it'll be one of the plot points that will happen in the next one. But yeah, Spider-Man 2, what a game. Barely any critiques of it that I can remember, which means they must have been pretty inconsequential because I just had so much fun playing it. So much fun. I think at the end of the day, that's what I love so much about it. It was just so much fun. I could sit down, especially during the end portion of the year, which for me was so busy with work and all that sort of stuff. It was just like, all right, I've got an hour. I'm just going to sit down and just zoom through New York City, do whatever I need to do, drop out, still be thinking about it, come back later. I think it's just perfect. I can't wait to see what Wolverine looks like when that comes out. Insomniac have my full faith with whatever they do pretty much from now on, if they didn't have it already, because, yeah, Spider-Man 2 has been overshadowed a bit this year, and I think rightfully so, by things like Baldur's Gate and Alan Wake and maybe in some cases Resident Evil and Zelda. However, shouldn't detract from the fact that in my eyes, it is a near perfect video game. It is just incredible. The total package.
Wow.
Mm, well said, George.
What a glowing review that is. Shit.
I'll also want to encourage anyone who hasn't done the side missions, like, and the collectibles, do it, because the rewards you get for that from a narrative point of view really pays off. There are some amazing things you find out when, for instance, you collect all the little spider bots, when you do all the missions, the pyromaniac, what is it, the missions with I forgot her name, but
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. And then what that leads to at the end.
Yeah, what that leads to.
And what that
exactly.
sets up. Yeah. Yeah.
Or when you get, there was another one where you get all the collectibles and there's some really cool rewards. So it just rewards you for, you know, playing the game and completing everything. And it's really great game. Such a great game.
Hey, before we, so would you give Spider-Man 2 a 10, Jordan?
I personally would, yeah. And that's not saying it's perfect, because to me 10's not perfect. I'm just saying it's amazing, incredibly amazing, a masterpiece.
Yeah. And would you give a 10 to Death Stranding, Vi?
Probably. Probably a 9.
Okay.
Would you give a 10 to your number one game, Dan?
I would give Baldur's Gate 3 an 11 if I could. It is unreal. It's one of those games you, as you play and as it takes a hold of your life, you think, are we ever going to get better than this? Am I ever going to play a game this good ever again? That is the sort of experience you have playing this game.
Yeah, we feel sorry for whatever comes next because you're like, it's never going to be as good as this. So what's the point?
Exactly. And then you play games like Horizon and you can't help but draw comparisons to Baldur's Gate and go, geez, the difference in character development. Yeah, this will go down in 10, 20 years. We'll be looking back at this game as one of the best ever made. I truly believe that. Easily game of the year. As soon as I played it, I knew it was game of the year, and it wasn't even close for me personally anyway. From a writing standpoint, I think they have done an exceptional job. There's so many writers involved, and for all of them to be at such a high standard with the characters, you've got 6 of those main companions with a couple of others as well along the way, and each and every one you get a fully fleshed out story that's worthy of its own game, each and every single one. It's probably the most replayable RPG I've ever played. I mean, you could play, I'm onto my 4th or 5th playthrough, heading on 300 plus hours. I mean, and there's still many things I've missed. And it does D&D better than no other game. There's so much passion behind this game that just seeps through. With every character, with every story beat, exploration, quests, you find yourself every so often going, how did they do this? Like, how did they actually pull this off? There's so much content. There's so many ways you can do it. You think, how the f*** did they pull this off? It's unbelievable. Living, breathing world, once you get to Baldur's Gate, you're like 80 hours in. And it just opens up even more and you're thinking, Jesus Christ. And it's all quality. It never dips in quality. So I'm going to do, me and Jackson, who we've had on the show, we're going to do a full deep dive, 2-3 hour. So look forward to that. But yeah, 10
out
of 10. I'll be
honest, I would listen to it. I would like have someone who has not played it and if I'm being honest, no real intention of playing it because D&D just isn't really my thing. I would listen to it because I didn't play Starfield. I listened to a few like spoiler casts for Starfield because I was like, I'm still interested to see like what this is about and what's going on with it.
Mm.
And I would do the same thing. So I would implore you to please do that because I'd love to get a bit of a peek behind the curtain to what is going on with Baldur's Gate.
It's truly phenomenal. Yeah. And then and look, I think the only thing against it at the moment is Act 3 is very buggy for many people.
Okay.
Which is Baldur's Gate. It is very buggy and there's some issues there in performance and things like that, but you can't help but go, fuck, it's so big. You can't help but just say, yeah, I can understand why there's so much content. It's actually, they should be charging $100 for it, US. Like 60 seems cheap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, fantastic. Incredible. I think it's probably the best game I've played since God of War 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say.
Wow. That's
I do huge. Think when we look back on 2023, Baldur's Gate will be the game of the year. It is the game that when we think back to 2023, you know, when you think back to like 2018, automatically go, oh, God of War.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be the game of the generation unless GTA 5 probably knocks it off. But besides that, I think it might be
GTA
the game
6,
of,
yeah.
game of
yeah.
this generation, of the you know, the PS5 generation. Although I love Hitman as well. I absolutely love Hitman. But yeah, I can't go.
You would put Hitman up there as game of the generation?
For me personally, yeah. World of Assassination as a package.
That was a lot of fun, World of Assassination. It was hard.
So, no, are you talking about the Rogue?
Roguelite. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I'm talking about that plus all three games in the one package.
Yeah,
is
all in one package. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's phenomenal. It's underrated.
Underrated.
Underrepresented. People don't really talk about it that much.
Yeah, I'd give that a 10. But yeah, no, Baldur's Gate, undeniably, just incredible. So, and that's it, guys. So
that's it. What a year.
BG3, Spider-Man 2, and Vike, your best game of this year was what?
Best game of this year would have been,
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man 2 does get the win in the end as our team's game of the year, which is a pretty good pick.
Yeah, for sure. It's a bloody awesome game.
All right,
that's putting it lightly.
The question is what to play in 2024.
Well, we're going to have an episode on what we're looking forward to. Stay tuned.
Not
for that.
Suicide Squad kills the Justice League.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm hyped. Can't wait. Not long now.
Can't wait to be disappointed.
Can't wait for Rocksteady to prove everyone wrong.
Oh, dear.
Come on, dear. Don't do this.
Am I living in the cloud? All right. And with that being said, it's been our pleasure to serve you.
And we will see you
later.